Hi there, and thanks for joining us. On this week's podcast, we speak to one bar owner on the challenges facing the industry as they still don't know when they're going to reopen. We speak to the wedding chef who has moved into a very different area and the charity drive for dogs. I'm Jonathan Healy, and this is Red Business.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
Michael O'Donovan, proprietor of the Castle Bar on South Main Street in Cork. How are you, Michael?
I'm good, Jonathan. Keeping bright side out and keeping optimistic for the future, hopefully.
I mean, we've had so many bad days. Like, when we're recording this now, we've had two new vaccines that have been announced in the last 24 hours, and that's all very positive and exciting. But it doesn't necessarily mean your pub's going to be open any sooner, does it?
No, I suppose. Look, listening to the government, and look, we can all see with the figures daily, and I suppose, more importantly, the hospital fears at the moment. As publicans, anybody in hospitality appreciates public health is the number one requirement. So listening to the virologists and the different, professionals that are involved in it, we're looking at a prolonged closure for maybe the next couple of months. But I suppose I am optimistic with all the news of the vaccines, and I suppose especially with the fine weather coming and better weather, that we'll have a repeat of last year, that numbers will decrease, I think, rapidly when the fine weather comes. And hopefully we'll see first maybe dining outside and people able to mix outside. And then hopefully as we move through maybe Q2, Q3, that we might even get some indoor dining and indoor options for our hospitality trade.
It's been a very difficult time, Michael, for everybody in the pub trade and the restaurant trade, anyone involved in hospitality. How have you been coping with this? Because everyone else is working in some shape or form, if it's working from home or whatever the case may be. Down to a very basic thing, how are you filling your days?
Yeah, I think I suppose I'm lucky that I have three kids, so homeschooling is a big part of our day at the moment. And as I talk to members, I think especially older members, elderly people, they're finding it particularly difficult. You know, when we went into lockdown, I suppose, last March, April, when we came out in April with the roadmap in May, people were able to do work at the bar, paint, you know, you'd get their specs, get your bar set up, sanitising units. So lots to do last summer. And then we had the false dawns on three occasions, but we were working towards targets. We opened then in September, closed in October, and people were kind of working towards hopefully opening in December. I know some of my colleagues got to open, the vast majority didn't get to open, but then we had Christmas to look forward to, where now in January, we're kind of staring at the end of January into February now, you know, the potential for a lot of us to be closed potentially till May, maybe, or beyond. Nobody knows. We don't have a crystal ball, but that's the difficult part, is filling the days right now. And when I do calls or Zoom calls with members, I'm really encouraging them to take up kind of a hobby at the moment and get out for a walk every day, just to get some headspace. Like I myself do it every day. My wife and kids, we go for a 5K walk around the business park here behind us. I think it's important to get out, get a bit of fresh air, get a bit of perspective, and then you drive on with your day.
You've no visibility, no more than anyone else has, as to when your pub will reopen. In terms of financial support, is there enough there to give you some confidence that you'll be able to get through the next few weeks and months?
To be quite honest, there's not, Jonathan. You know, up until October, we really had no supports other than that. You know, Fault Ireland gave us a bit of a grant to you know, get things prepared. We got the rates written off, and that was it, really. But now, thankfully, since the budget on the 13th of October, we got the CRSS, the COVID Restriction Support Scheme. While it's very welcomed, but where we are now, you know, we're closing in on 11 months closed for the vast majority of us. The CRSS just doesn't meet your weekly outgoings. You know, like I can say for myself, like my weekly outgoings would be about €500. My CRSS is about €380 because you still have your insurance, especially heating at this time, lighting, you know, monitored alarm systems, You have your broadband, telephone, etc. Lots of bills still have to be paid, even though the bar is closed. So, like last night, I was talking to a member who's renting a property. He's getting about, you know, €1,200, something similar to me, a month in his CRSS, but his rent alone is €2,350. So, like, you can do the maths and that, pay your bills on top of that. I'm very lucky. I don't have rent, or I don't have a mortgage, or I don't have a loan to pay on the bar. So the CRSS, as it stands, just it doesn't meet the bills. And I'm hearing from a lot of members, you know, they'll get to March, they'll get to April, but if it's prolonged after that, a lot of them are in big trouble. A particular member I spoke to last night, he's in big trouble after February because he said he just can't pay it. So we're pleading with the government. We've been asking them, and we've met with ministers. And I wrote myself this week to the Taoiseach on behalf of the members here in Cork City, asking him to double the CRSS. Other supports are there, like your EWSS for paying wages. But when we're closed, you know, to the vast majority of people, that's not effective at the moment, but that will become necessity when we reopen, to give some assurance, you know, for the rest of the year, so that people can be supported in jobs, because confidence, you know, mightn't just be there when we open up. We just don't know how long it'll be prolonged. So we'll have to work at getting people back into our premises. But for the time being, CRSS, to get us to that point to reopen.
How do publicans feel about the fact that the reopening of hospitality, that was largely blamed for the big spike we had, the third wave? And again, what I found difficult about that was the pubs that I would have seen did everything right. But it was people going in and mixing in large groups when they probably shouldn't have been. And it's very hard for a bar owner like yourself to police that. That was probably what did the damage. Do you think the industry got an unfair criticism based on what had happened and what other people had done who weren't running the bar?
Yeah, look, I suppose in early December, like here in Cork, we've about 240 licensed premises. From our, you know, survey that we did, there was only 48 premises across the city open for the month of December. Demand for them was really high. Like talking to colleagues, you know, when that first weekend they opened on the 7th of December, they had bookings right through nearly to, you know, because I think it was kind of anticipated that after New Year's Day, there might be an issue. And it was the perfect storm. Look, you know, they opened on the same week that retail opened, streets were busy. You know, the pubs, they really implemented, like I was in a few of them, the guidelines. I know some even invested into temperature checks at doors because I saw it. And they really try to you know, follow the guidelines and do everything right. But I suppose public, some of them, some people try to book tables, you know, and, say two tables of six, as was allowed, to have people have six at a table. And then they try to interact between tables. And I know talking to publicans, they tried to stop it. They tried to move tables. I think the biggest learning out of it is when we do open going forward, we really need the public to buy into this, because with their help, we can stay open, hopefully prolonged, and hopefully going into the future, we won't have any more lockdowns, but we'll all need to work together on it.
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing I'd imagine right now for you guys is that when you open, it's for good, that there won't be another stop start. So would publicans be happy to trade off to stay closed for another few weeks to have a bit of confidence that we'll be able to open and stay open maybe closer to the end of the spring?
Yeah, that's one thing we've said to ministers in meetings, because look, we saw it, like I saw it myself when I opened for the 16 days in September, you know, fridges full, stock in, like I made a huge financial at the end of it, as look, thankfully breweries took back draft beer, but everything packaged that I opened, I was stuck with. And like I know talking to colleagues that closed in December, it was a very similar scenario, and they had food on top of it, they were stuck with. So it's a huge financial loss closing your business. So we have said, look, if once we get the right supports, that's the key, I think, to it. Publicans and I think hospitality across the board would be in favour of staying closed. Once we knew that when we opened, we'd be opening for a prolonged period, that we wouldn't be looking at, you know, maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks open and then having to close again. We'd rather stay closed, as you said, for that extra couple of weeks. once we get confidence that we can stay open for a long period.
Okay, well, look, we wish you and all of your publican colleagues the best luck. I can't wait to get in for a pint, Michael. That is the biggest understatement of the entire day. But look, in the meantime, stay safe. Keep going for those walks. Keep dragging the kids with you. Michael O'Donovan, proprietor of the Castle Bar and Cork City spokesperson for the Vintners Federation. Thanks for joining us on Red Business.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Red Business. All that's best about business in Cork.
Now, my next guest is a chef who came up with a brilliant lockdown baby gift for new parents. Orla McAndrew, how are you?
I'm great, Jonathan. Thank you for having me on.
Lovely to talk to you. This is a really good idea because when you have a baby, it's all very chaotic and there's loads of people there to help you, but sometimes you forget to eat. So tell us what you came up with.
Well, actually, my original business, I'm actually a wedding and event caterer, but when COVID hit, my sister was actually quite heavily pregnant and I couldn't see her, obviously, but the only thing I could do was drive by and fill her little freezer with some nice home-cooked meals. And when that sort of developed into a bit of a business idea, and I thought it was something that would be really useful for all the other little mummies and daddies out there who had their hands tied up with new babies. So I launched my freezer meal offering and it's been going really well ever since.
Yeah, I mean, your own business, the bottom really fell out of it, didn't it? Because there were no weddings that needed Orla McAndrew to cater them, really.
That was it. That was it, exactly. And within the first couple of weeks of COVID, I had my thinking cap on because I just finished my own kitchen out here in the shed of my house, and there was nothing happening, so I had to get a bit creative, and I started doing weekend treat boxes and various other offerings, and it's been a really creative year for me, and I've found lots of things that worked and lots of things that didn't work, but this particular offering, I think it's really useful, and people love just being able to reach out and let people know that they care about them. And that's really, that's why it's working so well for me.
It's very difficult for couples as well at the moment because you're not allowed into the hospital for the most part. You're allowed in, I think, for the birth, or you were until relatively recently. So there's a lot of anxiety built in there. And whatever about the mammies who obviously need a lot of care, they might be getting it from the hospital. The daddies probably need as much support as they can get.
Absolutely. Oh, it's a terrible old situation for anybody who's going through, you know, bringing a new baby into the world and not having that kind of support that you'd be used to having. Like, you don't have your mom and your sister and everybody else around. So any little bit of help that is coming your way, I think people are really appreciative of it.
At the risk of making me hungry, Orla, what is in this parental survival kit?
So I have a huge range, actually, but some of the most popular dishes, I have a lamb tagine, there's chicken and broccoli crumble, I have shepherd's pies and lasagnas, then there's little snacky things that are really handy if you've just got your one hand and the baby in the other, but sausage rolls and free-range chicken goujons and all sorts of yummies like that.
And are you making all of this yourself in your kitchen, or are you getting some stuff in, repackaging it and sending it out? How's it working?
No, it's 100% homemade, handmade, and with love as well, because I think that's what kind of sets me apart as well. I really do think you can taste the love that goes into food without wanting to sound too twee, but I've always felt that. And I know from the feedback that I'm getting that people are really genuinely blown away with the quality of the food that they're getting. So it's a win-win. I'm happy and they're happy.
It's been quite the learning curve for you, because I presume that for the most part, yeah, you might have done a bit of cooking at home and then brought it to the venue. But now you've got a whole logistical challenge to get in front of, i.e. delivery. So how does that work? How do you end up delivering all this lovely food?
Well, I don't sleep much, Jonathan. it's a fairly full on. I have three little girls at home myself as well. And I suppose the fact that my husband has been able to work from home throughout all the lockdowns has kind of helped a little bit, and between us we're managing the kids and our two businesses, but yeah, I'm the chief cook and pot washer and deliverer and you name it, I do it. So it's full on, but you know, we're a year at it now, so I have it down to a fine art.
And do you think that weddings are going to come back in and become your full-time business again? Are you going to keep going with a little bit of what you're doing now? Have you found a new niche that you didn't think you had in you?
Do you know, it's interesting. My whole passion is event catering. I absolutely love the weddings and the buzz and being there on somebody's very special day. And this is a curveball that I never envisaged, but it's actually a very viable business. I am enjoying it. It's of value to my customers, and it's really helped me to spread awareness of my existence as well. So my hope is that if and when the weddings do come back, that more people now know of my existence and they've tasted my food. They've had a little tasty calling card, I like to think of it as. And they'll know that they can rely on me then when they do have their events in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm sure that people will buy into it because it sounds lovely. I mean, I'm hungry even thinking of it, and I'm just after having my own lunch. It's not just though for the new parents. You do other products as well, and it's all up on the website, is it?
Yes, I've just with the help of the trading online voucher actually from the LEOs, I just put up a brand new website. And all of my offerings are there. I'm also doing like a supper club at the end of each month. So it's a 3-course meal delivered to your house. So you're basically bringing the restaurant into your home, and there's full instructions on how to reheat and replate. I do care packages for everybody. I have cocooning parents as well. So that's another avenue that people are interested in and that have bought off me for. So yeah, it's going really, really well, and I'm delighted with it.
And it's great to break the monotony as well, because there's only so many times you can look at a pasta dish that you've made yourself before you get bored of it as well. The website is omcatering.ie. Orla, it's fabulous. And look, keep going as long as you can, because it's another great example of somebody who could have sat down, bemoaned the situation for 12 months and gone back to whatever they did in the first place. But for you, you said, that's not for me. And you cracked on with it and you created this wonderful business effectively out of nothing. omcatering.ie. Orla McAndrew, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a million, Jonathan. All the best.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
Now, Green Rebel Marine has joined forces with charity My Canine Companion to support families around Ireland living with autism. And that gives us a good opportunity to speak to My Canine Companion about what they do. Niall Ruddy is their CEO and he's with me now. Hello, Niall.
Hello, Jonathan.
Nice to talk to you. Tell us a little bit about what My Canine Companion does.
Okay. Well, I suppose My Canine Companion, our primary service is to provide accredited assistance or service dogs to children and young adults with difficulties, and that would be predominantly autism. Now, what the dogs will do for the child is their first job is safety. So the dog is actually physically attached to the child via belts around the child's waist. So a lot of children with autism, unfortunately, would have no sense of danger. So they could actually bolt or run out in front of traffic. So the dog is trained to stay in position when the child goes to bolt, keeping them safe. But there's also several other aspects to what the dog can do for the child. Companionship is a big one. Again, a lot of those children, a lot of kids with autism would find it very, very difficult socially. They find it very difficult to make friends. And often the dog is their best friend and unfortunately sometimes only friend.
Yeah, I mean, it's fabulous to see these kids out with these dogs because you see the impact that they have in their lives. I mean, they are a stabilizing force. As you say, they're a friend. Parents really, really see the benefit from when the dog first comes into the home. What is it that causes that connection?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a very natural thing. What we find, like we would train our dogs a little bit differently to other organizations insofar as we work with the families from day one. So we would be providing each family with a puppy and we work with that family through the whole training process for up to 2 years until their dog becomes qualified as a service dog. And that is the first time then that the dog is actually physically attached to the child. So the dog and child are actually growing up together. So the bond grows very, very deep over time.
And when you set about this process, how did you come to it? Because I know it's yourself and your wife, Cliona, were responsible for setting up the charity. Why did you get involved?
Sure. Well, it's really my wife, Cliona, with a bit of help from myself, I suppose. But Cliona was actually the first person in Europe to train a dog specifically for a child with autism. It was only happening in Canada back in 2003 or the early 2000s. And Cliona travelled to Canada to have a look at their program and do some training over there. She was a qualified guide dog trainer before that. So she set up the original program in 2005 in Ireland and in Europe, in fact.
So how many dogs have you managed in the intervening period to send out? How many families have you helped?
We provide over 60% of the country's total every year. So we're looking at about 45 dogs a year qualifying each year. So we would have about 300 working partnerships out there at the moment. So that would be fully qualified service dogs. We would also have a number of companion dogs that are specifically for the home. We provide therapy services in schools. We have a number of school therapy dogs. That's where dogs are working in the schools full-time. They'd be with their handler would be one of the teachers, and the dogs provide services to children on the spectrum in the schools, but also kids with anxiety, neurotypical children, but with anxiety, the dogs can provide them a lot of assurances.
Okay, so these dogs do an awful lot of heavy lifting, and I'm presuming the cost then comes with the training. Dogs are hard to come by at the moment in every walk of life, but you have to breed them, you have to train them, you have to keep them, and you have to cover all the bills. So how much does each dog cost?
Well, we keep costs down as low as we can. We breed all our own dogs at the moment. Over the last couple of years, we have a full breeding program, so all the dogs we have, we provide now are bred through our own program. So that does keep costs down because I suppose, as everybody knows, the cost of puppies over the last couple of years has really been huge. It could cost you $2,000 for a puppy these days. So our overall cost, which is a lifetime cost, is €10,000. So that's providing the training for the families in the early stages when the dog is a puppy. So we would have puppy classes around the country where our families attend. After about 14, 16 months, those dogs will come in for what you call formal training. So they would be in with us in our base in Blackpool for approximately 4 months, where they would then qualify as service dogs. After that, the parents will come down and work with us for 3 days down in Cork. And we will then attend, our trainers will then attend the family home for several attachment visits after that, where the dog is actually physically attached to the child, okay, completing the process.
So, as I said, a lot of work going into it. So how important then is it that you have some corporate support from the likes of Green Rebel Marine? Because if it wasn't for them, you wouldn't be able to afford the €10,000 lifetime support tag that comes with the dog. And fundraising is hugely significant as well.
Well, every €10,000 is life-changing for another family around the country, you know. I suppose there's an awful lot of pressure on parents, and unfortunately a lot of our funding comes directly from our clients fundraising themselves, which is pretty difficult considering they already have a lot of difficulties in their lives. So Green Rebel has been massive for us. I suppose our link with Green Rebel would be Mark O'Reilly, who is their chief operating officer, is actually his son Callum is actually a service user. And has the beautiful golden doodle Heather working with their family.
Okay, and I think there's been pictures of Heather on the papers in the last few days as well. How do people support you? I mean, yes, corporate support is one thing, but you do need the public to give you a few bob from time to time. So while you have people's ears, what do they need to do now?
Yes, Jonathan, we'd love if people just went along to our website, www.mycaninecompanion.ie. We have a number of fundraising initiatives there. We have a current campaign running, which is walk a mile a day for 30 days. So it's a pretty easy one to get involved with. It's only €20 to register. You go out and walk your mile a day. It's a great bit of exercise and you're helping a worthy cause.
Niall Ruddy, CEO of My Canine Companion, thank you so much for talking to us and the best of luck.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. Thanks for your help.
My thanks as always to all of my guests. Don't forget you can download every episode right now from redextra.ie. Myra Hayes-Goff was the producer, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Red Business. All that's best about business in Cork.